Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Alderman Byron Sigcho-Lopez will continue to chair Chicago's Housing Committee. Well, this comes after conservative alders called a special hearing to remove him because he spoke at a protest where a veteran burned the American flag. Plus, Mayor Brandon Johnson appointed the city's first ever chief homelessness officer. I sat down with WBEZ's Tessa Weinberg to learn more about these and other City Hall happenings. Here's Tessa on how Alderman Sigcho-Lopez fared in this Monday's vote.
This was a specially called city council meeting where conservative alderpersons and veterans were wanting to punish him for speaking at this protest where the American flag was burned. And it was a packed house, you know, where public can sit. It was lots of folks there who were to support him, also against him. You know, when he walked in, finally, there was applause. You know, he was applauding back to his supporters while at the same time some folks were calling out traitor. And it was definitely, you know, tensions were high. Yeah. After public comment finished, some protesters stood up and they had American flags printed on paper.
Really?
Ripped out, and lots of folks were carted out of the meeting. The mayor was having the sergeant of arms remove people, including Zachary Cam, who was the veteran who burned the American flag that kind of had spurred this whole controversy.
My goodness. So what were the overall arguments then? You mentioned some people were in support. You had alders who were criticizing him. What were they saying exactly?
Yeah, so when it came to alderpersons and what they were saying, you know, critics were, there was some debate over them saying, it's not that we disagree with someone burning the American flag. We understand that that's First Amendment right, that you can express what you want to say. But they kept arguing that as an alderperson, as a person in leadership, you're held to a higher standard. And some folks, like alderperson Chris Taliaferro, who himself is a veteran, says, you know, alderpersons shouldn't be standing with groups that are far left or far right. And there was a lot of discussion about what is proper conduct, what is proper political decorum for an elected official, while others were saying that they felt it was a double standard from some of their colleagues, that they would say, we support free speech, but then quibbling when it came to if they didn't agree with what was being said or the means by which it was being done. Alderperson Jesse Fuentes pointed out, saying, protesting, disagreeing, being different, that is very American. And so there was a lot of debate on both sides. And, you know, Alderperson Sigcho-Lopez apologized yesterday. He recounted some of the conversations he had with his colleagues over the weekend, even where they came to some better mutual understanding. But he was still very defiant yesterday, saying, you know, and kind of what some colleagues viewed as finger wagging to, to some, saying, if my actions offended anyone, especially veterans, I apologize. But him saying, you know, I find it reprehensible from veterans not to listen to a veteran himself, kind of alluding to this flag burning by a veteran and some of his colleagues.
Like you said, he wouldn't denounce that, that piece of things.
Yeah, he was still very fierce in his protection of a free speech.
You mentioned Alderman Taliaferro there. I mean, he spearheaded the effort to remove Sigcho-Lopez. What did he say after speaking with Sigcho-Lopez?
Yeah, so he recounted that they had this conversation and that he himself apologized to Sigcho-Lopez for, you know, any threats or harm that was, you know, caused to him and his family. This became very heated, you know, it was all over social media. It kind of blew up. He said after speaking with Sigcho-Lopez, he accepted his apology. That was enough for him, but that was enough for others. You know, some like alderperson Bill Conway was still raising, you know, there is no First Amendment right to get to be in a leadership position, and that they were still salty about how things were done and, you know, how conciliatory Sigcho-Lopez was being at the meeting.
Interesting how this was all over, you know, someone else's free speech, right? As in the veteran, not the older person.
Yeah, and that was something that Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson, when asked about all this last week, and he was, you know, defending Sigcho-Lopez, he raised, you know, was comparing this to when former President Barack Obama was embroiled in controversy over remarks his pastor had made, and Obama later, you know, denounced those remarks, but he was likening it to that situation, saying, you know, we're condemning Sigcho-Lopez for someone else's actions, and actions that he says, you know, are protected First Amendment right, that maybe if I'm not going to myself burn a flag, that someone else has the right to do that and express their speech.
Wow. Yeah, definitely leads to a very, very tense moment. I mean, what is next here in this? I mean, do things go back to normal for Sigcho Lopez?
Yeah, so he, you know, retains his position as chair of the Housing Committee. I think it will be interesting to see how those relationships, you know, are they going to mend? Are they going to stay frayed and potentially break down with some of his critics on the council? I think this was also a moment, you know, more than just this debate about free speech during the meeting. There was a lot of, I think, reflection as a city council over, is this how we handle conflict? Some calls for, you know, members to, you know, have more mutual respect for each other, to have, you know, some people saying, you know, this could have been a conversation you had one-on-one privately rather than resorting.
Why did we have to call a special meeting?
Yeah, to this kind of very incendiary, you know, public way of handling things. You know, I think that was some of that we saw even when the meeting was getting underway was, you know, will they even have a quorum to hold this?
Right.
If, you know, folks remember last year, there was also attempts to hold a special city council meeting to put the city sanctuary status up for a vote.
That's right.
And they weren't unable to get a quorum to even hold that. And that led to more controversy with, Alderperson Carlos Ramirez Rosa's actions trying to, you know, prevent folks from joining that meeting, kind of later also blowing it up into this big political moment for him. And we saw that even at yesterday's meeting, it was kind of that wait and see in the beginning.
Yeah, some people are even saying this is an effort to go after Mayor Johnson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are you hearing about that?
I think that was something Alderperson Sigcho Lopez, after the meeting, as he kind of was defiant and was successful in retaining his position, he was, saying that, you know, he felt that this was, you know, an attempt by some of colleagues to undermine the mayor, to, you know, undermine his allies. And so I think we'll see if this continues to be a tactic of conservative alderpersons trying to force action on some of these things when there's incendiary moments that arise. But the mayor stood steadfast with Sigcho Lopez, and he had the votes to continue to remain in his position and ultimately avoid any punishment or repercussions.
Tessa, back in October, Mayor Johnson announced the first ever homelessness prevention officer, and yesterday we found out who it will be. So he announced that he's tapping Cindy Soto to fill that position. Tell us about her and the experience that she's bringing to the role.
So this is a new position that Mayor Brandon Johnson created last year via executive order. And Soto will be tasked with addressing the issue of homelessness in the city, creating a five-year plan, working with different agencies to be having this whole of city government response to tackling it. She was a senior director of community impact at the Chicago Community Trust, and she previously worked in the city as well. She was the managing deputy commissioner for the Department of Housing, so she has experience working in the city, dealing with these issues, and she's also co-chaired Mayor Brandon Johnson's housing subcommittee as part of his transition when he had lots of different experts on different committees. As well.
And she doesn't need to be approved by the city council, does she?
I don't believe she needs to be confirmed because this was a new position created within the mayor's office rather than a new department head, for example. But this is new, so I guess we'll see if I'm right on that. But I believe she wouldn't have to be.
Her big press conference was yesterday. What stuck out to you?
Yeah, it was interesting to see how she raised her own experiences facing housing insecurity. She said she herself sought stable housing at 18 to escape violence. She talked about, you know, funding existing programs, also launching new initiatives, and with a goal of addressing systemic racism. And she also, you know, raised that phrase we've heard Johnson use a lot of addressing root causes. And so I think it'll be interesting to see what her vision will be to address homelessness and how that maybe taps into lots of areas, whether it's mental health issues or other things.
I feel like I'm hearing a lot of buzzwords, though. I'm curious if you had a sense of clarity as to like what exactly she would be tasked with doing in this new position.
Yeah, I think it sounds a lot of it like, you know, streamlining and making sure folks are talking to each other and actually that there is a concerted effort around this. I think some of that remains to be seen of how she, since this is a brand new role, fleshes it out. You know, I think already there's some areas I'm curious about. For example, the city has already said when it comes to the thousands of asylum seekers we've had arrive to the city, they've really kind of been in their own shelter system, though, of city-run shelters specifically for migrants. And the city has said, you know, we're interested in combining that to ensure, you know, it's all under our homelessness shelter system, that there aren't these kind of dual systems happening.
And no one's being left out.
Yeah. So yeah. I wonder, you know, how that will look like. If she, I'm sure she would probably play a hand in that of what that looks like, of how do you merge that? How do you create this? And, you know, there, mm-hmm. there are different populations as well with different needs. How do you address all those things? At the same time, Mayor Brandon Johnson is working to pass his large borrowing plan for $1.25 billion to fund affordable housing and economic
right.
development. And while that is, you know, a financing tool, it's to fund, you know, current programs, new existing ones. And so I'm sure she will be playing a role in, if that passes, the vision and, you know, what are we going to fund? What are maybe some of these new programs for affordable housing and, mm-hmm. and addressing homelessness, and how will that all work in hand in hand? So those are some areas I already on my mind.
Yeah. And that's great context, Tessa, because I mean, when you look at, you know, the description, one of the tasks is coordinating across city agencies and departments. At first glance, it sounds very vague, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I think it speaks to the nature of homelessness, that it does fall into multiple city departments, that it's, you know, not just one agency mm-hmm. that really is tasked with this, that we are going to have aspects that fall under
yeah,
many
umbrellas. Yeah, a lot
umbrellas.
Of red tape, too.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. A lot of red tape to go through. So when does she start?
I believe it's next week that she's officially started, but she was revealed at a press conference yesterday, and when we, you know, she was able to speak, the mayor spoke a little bit as well.
Yeah. Well, while I have you here, it has been a while since we talked about the whole back and forth when it comes to ShotSpotter. Mm-hmm. I hear there's an update.
Yes. So yesterday, the Chicago City Council, the Police and Fire Committee advanced an ordinance that would try to give older persons more say over this. You know, they're pushing back against Mayor Brandon Johnson terminating the ShotSpotter contract. It's still in place right now. It's winding down, going to end in September. Mm-hmm. He's keeping it in place at least for the Democratic National Convention, for the summer months, which typically we see a spike in violence across the city. And this ordinance that passed committee yesterday would basically try to give alderpersons more say, and they would get to have a say of whether ShotSpotter was going to be taken away from their wards. There would have to be a full city council vote if that was the case. It also...
Where does it seem like some of them are falling at this point?
Well, there was a lot of discussion yesterday, especially from alderpersons on the south and west side, saying we want to keep this in place for our communities. And they were raising examples even from this past weekend when we saw mass shootings across the city. They were even raising that they said some of these instances that police are only getting notified because of a ShotSpotter alert, not because there's a 911 call, and that they feel this is really an essential tool for police response in their areas. But this is also a controversial technology. Activists have long called for this to no longer be used. An Inspector General's report had found that the technology rarely leads to investigatory stops or evidence of gun crimes, can change the way that officers are interacting with communities. But alderpersons, you know, some of them were saying, we really want this.
Yeah.
This is a tool we want to keep. And the ordinance also specifies that they wouldn't be penalized for wanting to keep this if they're outspoken about that, that there wouldn't be repercussions, like losing a leadership post or something like mm-hmm. that. And it also called for more data collection while the contract is still in place to hopefully, I assume, bolster some of their claims. But
yeah.
I think there's real questions about if this contract is going away on a citywide level, how would that work on a ward-by-ward basis? Who would pay for that? So I think there's
And if we have more instances like we had, as you brought up this past weekend, mm-hmm. I mean, what does that look like in a post ShotSpotter world?
Yeah, I think there's questions that have to be ironed out. How would that actually work in practice? So
we'll leave it there. That's Tessa Weinberg, WBEZ City Government and Politics Reporter. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Linnea Dominic, edited by Meha Ahmed, and mixed by Brenda Ruiz. Make sure to check back on the podcast this afternoon and subscribe to our newsletter so that you don't miss a thing. You can sign up for that at wbez.org/resetnews. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening.
Have you ever wondered why anyone drinks Malort? Or if there are actually lobsters in the Chicago River? Then listen to the Curious City podcast, where we answer all your questions about Chicago and the region. WBEZ's Curious City is part of the NPR network and available wherever you find your podcasts.